This is Jay Sekulow, two Supreme Court cases and a Russian investigation.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Welcome to the broadcast, everyone. I want to take a breath for a moment here and recap where we are, because the world has changed rather drastically in 48 hours. And I'm going to start with a quick overview on the Supreme Court decisions that have come out, because there were two, and they kind of got a little bit of short shrift here because of all the other news that was going on. But let's take a step back on this executive order and get into this a little bit, because remember what I said initially. Early on, when those courts were ruling against the president, the Fourth Circuit, the Court of Appeals in the Ninth Circuit, the district courts that were hearing the case in Hawaii, I said, when this goes to the Supreme Court of the United States, which was a very straightforward executive order, that all this nonsense that they've been talking about, where the president made statements during the campaign and isn't this a Muslim ban, that all of that would be put aside and the court would actually apply the law. So that's what we were talking about. The court applying the law. And that's really what we're dealing with here. So again, I said that this was in fact going to be a situation where ultimately the president was going to prevail. So let me start with you, Professor Harry Hutchison. We've now had a chance to actually review the per curiam order, as it's called. This is the preliminary before you get the full opinion, which would be argued sometime in the fall. Although I'm still trying to figure out why the government didn't ask for expedited review, but that's another question. Your analysis quickly, Harry, here, as we kind of just set this up, how significant of a win was this for the administration?
Jay, this was a very significant win because it reaffirmed Article II presidential power. It also reaffirmed the congressional delegation of power, particularly in the realm of national security and immigration law. In addition, the Supreme Court essentially rejected the lower court's analysis, which claimed that the executive order was dripping with religious animus.
Which is interesting because, Andy, there's not even a mention of religion or Muslim ban or religious animus. The entire analysis that both the Fourth Circuit and Ninth Circuit engaged in, completely absent, as I knew it would be, from the Supreme Court.
Well, as you knew it would be, and as you correctly surmised and concluded that it would be, when it got to the Supreme Court of the United States. We have to realize that the judges who were the majority writers in the Ninth Circuit and in the Fourth Circuit in these cases acted like nothing more than politicians wearing black robes.
Yep.
They were Clinton and Obama appointees. The dissents primarily were Republican appointees who applied the law. But when the Supreme Court of the United States got this case, the question was, shall we review the case and shall we stay the injunctions that had been entered by the lower courts that had precluded enforcement of the president's travel restriction? And let's just say this. It isn't a travel ban.
No.
He restricted travel from certain countries that had majority Muslim populations because those people could not be vetted to come into this country.
And
What's wrong with that?
It was a 90-day ban. Most of the Muslim world was not subject to any of this. So,
that's right.
So, Harry, there are some that are on the left are saying, well, this wasn't that. Well, we only got 40 seconds left, so let's do this. We got a lot more to talk about here. We're going to get into this because, again, when the opinion came out, you barely got a chance to breathe on it because there was so much other news. But I think it's important for you to understand what happened here. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, more from Professor Harry Hutchison, Dr. Andrew Economo. We're going to talk about this opinion. We're going to talk about the Trinity case, which was also decided. We're going to talk about what's the status of the Russian investigation. We hit all that fake news issue yesterday. I mean, that was pretty incredible, of what's going on with CNN and some of these other media outlets. But this is par for the course right now. All right, we'll be back with more in just a moment.
It is very troubling. Former Obama Attorney General Loretta Lynch meddled in the FBI's investigation of Hillary Clinton. She instructed the FBI director to call the criminal investigation, quote, a matter, not an investigation. Even worse, she held a secret closed-door meeting on a government plane with former President Bill Clinton while Lynch's Department of Justice conducted a criminal investigation of his wife. Lynch violated federal regulations. She broke DOJ directives and ethics rules. Now the Senate Judiciary Committee has launched an investigation into the former Obama AG's corrupt actions. We've started our own investigation at the ACLJ, filing a major lawsuit against the Lynch DOJ over evidence of her unethical and deceitful actions. Demand truth and accountability with us. Add your name to our petition. It's time to uncover the truth. It's time to hold Lynch accountable. Call now 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, the agenda Iran, Russia, and jihadists share for conquering the world. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. So we're giving you a little bit of an analysis here because a lot has happened. So let's start with, again, we're going to focus on the executive order. So the president put in place a 90-day pause for those originating from six countries and a 120-day pause on refugee status. And the court said that those were both constitutional, with the only carve-out being if there was a bona fide basis upon an existing relationship with the United States or with an individual or family. And it had to be serious. It had to be compelling. And Harry, that was really the law anyways, because the law had a case-by-case analysis.
Absolutely. And I think that was the administration's policy on the ground. And Alan Dershowitz, he opines that the president will likely prevail on the merits on virtually every contested point with respect to the executive order. And the president ought to prevail. Yep. There is no legal justification for denying President Trump's executive order and implementing the order expeditiously.
So here's an interesting side note to this. So, of course, when the case was argued at the Fourth Circuit, you remember that line where the lawyer was asked the question by the judge, well, if Hillary Clinton had signed this order, would it be constitutional? Answer, yes. But because the president was President Trump, it would not be constitutional because of statements he allegedly said and or statements he did say on the campaign trail. We knew that that was bogus. That was going nowhere. There's no way that could be the law. Lo and behold, it went nowhere. There's no way that could be the law. But that was like the basis of the Ninth Circuit opinion and the Fourth Circuit for that.
The Fourth Circuit. And both of the circuits. Jay, I think that we have to realize that when we got to our Supreme Court, we finally have here, it's not necessarily a victory, but it is a reaffirmation of the constitutional separation of powers. And I think it is, in some sense, a victory for the executive branch of the government.
I think it was a big victory
for the
executive,
for the presidency and what the presidency is and the powers that it has over foreign relations and foreign affairs. And when our Congress ascribes those activities that are amenable to being executed by the president. And that's what the Supreme Court said in this case. The Congress has spoken. The president has plenary power over issues of immigration and the determination of whether aliens can come into the country. And as you said, and I think that's really what we need to look at, the president put a pause on immigration. And that has been sustained by the Supreme Court. And I think ultimately, and I agree with you, it's going going to be probably a unanimous opinion
so.
If they read the law correctly and the Constitution.
The only dissent, if you want to call it that, was not really a dissent at all. It was Gorsuch, Alito, and Thomas saying it should have gone further, and they shouldn't have even carved out the case-by-case exception if you have a relationship with the United States. Now, ACLU, I said this on Monday, they were sending out emergency alerts like the sky was falling. But Harry, let's talk about the law here, because this was a very important issue on presidential power and presidential authority.
Absolutely. And so the Supreme Court has clearly established presidential power in this arena. If you go back to Kleindienst versus Mandel, Kerry versus Den, in all of those cases, the Supreme Court has deferred in general to presidential power in this arena. The Article 2 of the Constitution commands that deference. Now, the Fourth Circuit and the Ninth Circuit were prepared to ignore the Constitution. And so the question becomes, why were they prepared to ignore the Constitution?
Well, let me ask that question. Why were they prepared to ignore the Constitution? Because they did.
Because they wanted to reach a decision grounded in emotivism. And that is feelings. So they were concerned that the executive order would upset the feelings of Muslim Americans. The Constitution is not a suicide pact.
Right.
And so we cannot defer national security to people's feelings. And I think the United States Supreme Court rightly rejected the analysis of both the Ninth Circuit and the Fourth Circuit. And I think they will uphold the ban essentially in toto. Going forward.
All right. So it's for everybody to understand what's happened. So they've issued basically a stay. So the court issued a stay saying the injunction that was in place, 95% of it, that injunction is basically dissolved while the case is pending.
Right.
Then they issued an order saying we're going to grant review of both cases subject to briefing in October. Now, why they didn't ask for expedited review, I'm still trying to figure that one out, because this was a perfect case for expedited review.
Yes.
But for whatever reason, go figure, the government didn't ask for that. All right, so I can't quite figure that one out, but I will tell you this. If you look at the way the court is dealing with this, and if, in fact, what we know is true, that the ACLU admitted that, in fact, if this was issued and executed by Hillary Clinton, it would have been constitutional, that was the end of the case. Here's what happened, actually, at the oral argument. Take a listen.
We have an order on its face. We can read this order. And we have no antecedent statements by a candidate about this order. We have a candidate who won the presidency, some candidate other than President Trump won the presidency, and then chose to issue this particular order with whatever counsel he took, whether it's his personal advisor in the White House or whether the Secretary of State, Homeland Security, or National Security, or whatever. He issued this executive order. Do I understand that just in that circumstance, the executive order should be honored?
Yes, Your Honor. I think in that case, it could be constitutional.
That was the end of the case. Sometimes in an oral argument, you say something that comes back to kind of haunt you. That was the one. So basically, if anybody else would have signed it, Andy, it would have been fine. But President Trump didn't, because he made these statements before, which no justice of the Supreme Court put any weight into whatsoever in their initial analysis of this case.
But Jay, what astounds me is having conceded that on the part of the immigrant group,
ACLU lawyer.
Yes, the ACLU lawyer, who having conceded that, nonetheless, the Fourth Circuit in a majority opinion rules against the government in this case.
Go figure.
And only three or four of the judges, Judge Niemeyer, some of the others, Judge Shedd, the names that I recall, and I was very impressed with their dissenting opinion.
But they were the dissents.
They were the dissents. They wouldn't prevail. So, you know, once having conceded that, how the court could have done this is astounding to me.
But, you know, nevertheless, here we are. So now it's going to be fully briefed and fully argued. Unless, of course, and I mean, I've thought about this, Harry, what if the administration in this next 90, 120 days puts forward their final rules and regulations? They figured out what they can do. The case is then moot.
Absolutely. And they can adduce evidence in support of their final rules pursuant to their study. And then, in essence, they can withdraw this appeal.
You said this thing about emotions, basically taking the best of this. And I want our radio audience, Facebook and Periscope, to understand what's going on here. There was no grounding in law for what the Court of Appeals in the Ninth or Fourth Circuit did. Nothing. No justice of the Supreme Court in this initial order said to the contrary. Nobody picked up on that argument that was made by the Fourth Circuit and Ninth Circuit. Not one justice of the U.S. Supreme Court that thought that that was okay.
Absolutely. And if you go back to Alistair McIntyre's writing, he wrote a book called After Virtue. And he talked about the fall of the Roman Empire. And then he likened the fall of the Roman Empire to the current cultural moment in the United States and the West. And he suggested that during this current cultural moment, emotivism, identity politics would reign. We are no longer grounding our legal decisions in reason or the law or in moral absolutes. And so the Fourth Circuit, the ACLU, the Ninth Circuit, crying Chuck Schumer, they are all grounding their analysis in emotion. And we cannot safeguard the American people and their future from Islamic terror by focusing on emotion. It just will not work.
Yeah, I would take it. I agree with that. And here's my question, Andy, and I want to ask you this. With all the hype and the left crowing about this, and I remember the CNNs and the MSNBCs and President Trump now, you know, taken to task, Trump's ban held unconstitutional. It comes out, they do acknowledge this was a big win, but they really downplay the significance of it, except the ACLU, who basically said the sky was falling.
Well, I think that they don't need to downplay the significance of it. This was a significant decision for the Constitution, for the presidency, and for the executive, I think. It's very important that we realize that the Supreme Court of the United States, and I'm very proud of this court, without a single dissenting opinion right. on the merits of the injunctions, stayed those injunctions except for a very limited class of people who have a bona fide connection with the United States.
Which was basically, by the way, the person they based that on, the doctor's mother-in-law, I think is what
right.
it was.
The imam's mother-in-law.
She had gotten an approval the weekend before the opinion came out through the regular administrative process. So none of the administrative process is done away with here either. So that's why I say this was really a complete vindication of the president. All right, we'll keep talking about this. I want to talk about the other case that didn't get a lot of attention. It should have, and that's the Trinity Lutheran case, big case on church-state separation. I want to talk about what's going on in the Russia probe. I've got an analysis I've been laying out on that one. And then we'll talk more about this whole situation with some that are doing the investigations here. You talk about conflicts of interest. There are more than you can count on what's going on here right now. More than you can count. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be taking some comments. But also, let me encourage you here. There's a lot of news and a lot of developments, and we wanted to give you a more thorough dive here on what's at play. But then I want to go to the whole issue of what's going on with the Russia investigation. What's really at stake now that we know that President Obama was aware of, quote, Russian hacking and did nothing. Back with more in a moment.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulo reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. It is very troubling. Former Obama Attorney General Loretta Lynch meddled in the FBI's investigation of Hillary Clinton. She instructed the FBI director to call the criminal investigation, quote, a matter, not an investigation. Even worse, she held a secret closed-door meeting on a government plane with former President Bill Clinton while Lynch's Department of Justice conducted a criminal investigation of his wife. Lynch violated federal regulations. She broke DOJ directives and ethics rules. Now the Senate Judiciary Committee has launched an investigation into the former Obama AG's corrupt actions. We've started our own investigation at the ACLJ, filing a major lawsuit against the Lynch DOJ over evidence of her unethical and deceitful actions. Demand truth and accountability with us. Add your name to our petition. It's time to uncover the truth. It's time to hold Lynch accountable. Call now 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. I want to go right to another Supreme Court case. It just did not get a lot of attention, and that's the Trinity Lutheran case. And that was a big case because people said, oh, what was it really about? It was a church that applied for a program within Missouri that allowed for excess rubber to be utilized for playground safety. You know how they'll put that instead of the cement. And everybody was allowed, all these nonprofit groups were allowed to participate, but the church was denied because it was a religious institution. Now, the court rejected that, a majority court, 7-2. So this was a big win. We filed a brief in that case. Our friend Dave Cortman from the Alliance Defending Freedom argued the case. Harry, let's talk about first the significance of the case. The holding basically focuses on what?
Essentially, the holding focuses on whether or not a religious institution can receive state funding with respect to a generally applicable program. This is a safety program, or whether or not it can be denied funding pursuant to a state constitutional amendment, a so-called Blaine Amendment, which is grounded in anti-Catholic animus. And this amendment was passed during the 19th century.
The Blaine Amendments,
right. The Blaine Amendment.
Right.
And essentially, the United States Supreme Court said that if you discriminate against a religious institution,
yep,
we will test that under strict scrutiny.
Which is the highest level of review that's given in a case like this.
Correct. And so the state had to demonstrate that it had a compelling interest and that its policy was narrowly tailored to fulfill the state's interests.
Yep.
And the state could not sustain its burden of proof. And the Supreme Court voted 7-2 in favor of the religious school. Obviously, Justice Sotomayor and Justice Ginsburg voted against the school in part, this is my own opinion, because they are filled with religious animus.
All right, so here's what Chief Justice Roberts said, who authored the opinion. Quote, the exclusion of Trinity Lutheran from a public benefit for which it is otherwise qualified solely because it is a church is odious to our Constitution and cannot stand. Now, we've argued a series of those cases at the Supreme Court of the United States for decades. I mean, the Lamb's Chapel case, they were saying, oh, it's church-related, the film series by Focus on the Family, you can't show it here, 9-0. This one was 7-2. What's interesting here, Andy, is and the Chief Justice points this out in the opinion. If the dissent was correct, police service and
That's
fire
right.
service
yes.
could be denied to a church.
That's right. If let's suppose we have a church, and the church has got and then there's a fire in the church, would it be inappropriate to have the fire department come and put out the fire solely because it is a church? Pushed to its logical conclusion, the dissent would say, yeah, you can't receive public benefit because you're a church. That's ridiculous. And the Supreme Court, in the majority opinion, said that. In other words, denying a generally available benefit solely on account of religious identity, the Supreme Court
yep.
said, imposes a penalty on the free exercise of religion that can only be justified by a state interest of the highest order, and that didn't exist in this case.
But the logic would be, I mean, if the dissent was correct, you would say, well, police services and fire department services would be denied.
That's right.
And clearly should be denied, I mean, under that scenario.
Absolutely. And so if we accepted the dissent's approach, it's important to note that over 30 states have Blaine Amendments.
Yep.
That could mean in the future that police and fire department services would be denied all religious institutions in those 31 states.
Yeah.
That makes no sense.
Yeah, and I think this is a good sign also. By the way, I should tie this in as well. Justice Gorsuch, in the executive order case joined the concurring opinion by Justice Alito and Justice Thomas, saying that the whole executive order should have been deemed constitutional. And he wrote a concurring opinion in Trinity as well, did he not?
That's correct.
Yeah. And what was the basis of his opinion? He just fundamentally argued what the absurd nature of where this would go.
Well, yes, but he also suggested that the Supreme Court ought to be stronger because we don't need to distinguish between religious status and religious use. And so he would support a broader statement from the Supreme Court in favor of protecting religious liberty. That's clearly consistent with the analysis that we offered when he was nominated.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting also because in that regard, he said that religious freedom, free exercise of religion, is not just the freedom to think or believe, but it's the freedom to engage it.
That's right, to exercise it. But you know, Jay, I think there's an important point here. I read this opinion very carefully, and I read the dissent, painful though it was to read that dissent. But I read this opinion, and I noted a case that the Supreme Court relied upon, Evergreen versus Board of Education of Ewing, from 1947. That is a case that is nearly as old as I am, in which the Supreme Court said a state cannot hamper its citizens in the free exercise of their own religion. Consequently, it cannot exclude individual, and I'm reading from the opinion, Catholics, Lutherans, Mohammedans, that's what they called them then, Baptists, Jews, Methodists, non-believers, Presbyterians, or members of any other faith because of their faith or their lack of it. What? From receiving the benefits of public welfare legislation. So when the ACLU or whoever these left-wing organizations bemoan, oh my gosh, what a terrible opinion this is and what it does, we're not saying anything that hadn't been said and been the law of the United States for nearly 70 years.
But, you know, this thing went all the way up, and it took the Supreme Court of the United States to recognize. Harry, looking at this constitutionally, how big of a win is it?
I think it's very, very significant. I think it opens the door down the road for an expansion of school voucher programs that include religious institutions, and that is a win for school children all over the United States.
And, of course, that is what they're afraid of the most. My goodness, people will have school choice. That would be horrible. But that's what, look, these Supreme Court decisions are incremental. You take them one issue at a time, you deal with them one issue at a time, and then you're building blocks. I mean, we've been doing this for almost 40 years. And you're talking about cases that have been litigated every decade. And you continue to build the blocks here. Now, what's happened is between the executive order and the Trinity case, this was not a good day for the left. This was not their best day. Which then brings me to what I want to talk about in the next half hour of this broadcast. They also did not have a very good day, as you know, as we talked about yesterday in the media, on the so-called Russia probe. So we're going to get into that, and I sent out a series of tweets yesterday kind of laying out the case on where this thing really is. And in light of the reports about the Obama administration knowing that there was, in fact, this supposed Russia hacking and Russian manipulation of the election, although the president said actually nothing could have happened like that while he was being briefed by the intelligence agencies. And it makes you wonder about those intelligence agencies a little bit. I just need to say that for the record. But we're going to get into that in the second half hour of this broadcast. Again, take a breath, everybody. Look, a lot of news have come out. There's a lot of issues. We haven't even gotten into the situation with Syria and the concerns there. So that could be a big development. So we're looking at all of these issues. But we're here for another 30 minutes. If you don't get the full hour of the broadcast, of course, on Facebook and Periscope, you do. Most of our stations now carry the full hour of the broadcast. But if you don't get it, simply go over to ACLJ.org. You can get an audio. You can get a video copy there. You could also, of course, get our podcast. And stay engaged with us on various social media platforms. Twitter, Facebook. I've got a page. Jordan's got a page. Logan has a page. Than has a page. I'm going to get Andy and Harry to have a page. But we do have that information available. We're constantly sending out updated information, so we encourage you to do that. All right, we're going to be here for another 30 minutes. I'm going to get into more of the politics of what's happening, but also more on this Russia probe. So we've got a lot more to discuss. You stay tuned. Tell your friends to tune in right now. We got a lot more ahead. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
It is very troubling. Former Obama Attorney General Loretta Lynch meddled in the FBI's investigation of Hillary Clinton. She instructed the FBI director to call the criminal investigation, quote, a matter, not an investigation. Now the Senate Judiciary Committee has launched an investigation into the former Obama AG's corrupt actions. We've started our own investigation at the ACLJ. Add your name to our petition. Call now 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org.
Back to the broadcast, everyone. Now I want to turn our attention to the politics and the Russia situation. So I'm trying to put this in perspective for you and encourage you to kind of follow my train here, because this to me is what has happened. So we got the news breaking over the weekend that, in fact, the president, previous administration, President Obama, knew that there was attempts at Russia hacking. They knew what was going on. They were aware of it, the intelligence agency, and they decided to do nothing about it. So here's what we know. This is what I call the absurd nature of what we're now dealing with. So we now know that the Obama administration was fully aware of the intelligence regarding the Russia hacking into the U.S. election, and purported hacking, purported Russia investigation, all this. They knew all this. Okay. They decide not to take significant action on this because they were convinced somehow this was going to impact the election, and they were also convinced, guess what? Hillary Rodham Clinton was going to win. However, she loses. President Trump wins. So now we end up with a special counsel investigating Russia and collusion. That's supposedly what's going on right now. Yet, all the intel and information was already known by the previous administration. So what we should have is an investigation as to why the previous administration failed to act, not a special counsel on facts already known. But that's what we have. So the president, in my view, deserves an apology, as does the American people. Harry, first, have I said anything incorrect there?
Absolutely not. The only thing I would add, Jay, is that this story suggests that President Obama was intimidated by the Russians and he had no idea of the popularity of Donald Trump.
Yeah, I think there's no question about that. But, you know, the President Obama made that statement. Do we have that bite where the president makes a statement saying there's no way they could have impacted the election? This is in October when he's already been briefed on this. Take a listen.
There is no serious person out there who would suggest somehow that you could even rig America's elections, in part because they're so decentralized and the numbers of votes involved. There's no evidence that that has happened in the past or that there are instances in which that will happen this time.
All right. So when you look at that, the president makes that statement. Andy, you're shaking your head. What are you thinking
I'm thinking, why are we having this investigation with Robert Mueller right now when the former community organizer, who was the president of the United States at the time, made that statement that there is no way in which the Russian hacking or alleged hacking or putative hacking could have had an effect on the election? I mean, why are we engaging in this time-consuming and wasteful investigation by Robert Mueller into what the Russians did or didn't do and what the Trump administration knew or didn't know? I don't understand it. It is hard for me to believe this. I can't get my mind around it. And that's pretty hard to try to understand something as fundamental as that.
So they were sending out, I mean, Harry, completely mixed messages here. In one sense, he's getting all this intel briefing saying this is what's happening. On the other, he's telling America none of this is happening.
Absolutely.
You don't
not.
Get both. I mean,
absolutely, Jay. So I think the point to be made is the president was committed to a fictional narrative designed to protect Hillary Clinton's campaign. He presumed that she would win. Then once she lost, the deep state turned its attention to explaining why she lost. And essentially, if we accept President Obama's claims, she lost because President Obama failed to take action to thwart the Russians. And it was his responsibility. It was not candidate Trump's responsibility. So he abdicated his responsibility, and he ought to take
full credit for that.
But in the interim, we got these investigations going on. And then when, I haven't even gotten into the Andrew McCabe story yet, because that's like almost so unbelievable you can't believe it. But so, Andy, you're shaking your head, but this is what the president's actually dealing with.
This is what is happening here. This Democratic left-wing resistance to the president of the United States is crippling and paralyzing the course of legislation and the agenda of a president who was elected and inaugurated to do the things that he promised that he was going to do. And I've said it before on this program. The president of the United States has said that he is going to drain the swamp. That is the most terrifying thing that anybody in Washington can hear, because the Washington swamp will yield the monsters. We hear what the community organizers said about the Russia hacking, and I still ask this question: why are we permitting and pursuing Mueller's investigation into this, time wasting and diverting attention of President Trump from the important things that he has set out to do and has done? Not the least of which is the confirmation of Neil Gorsuch as a justice of the Supreme Court.
And we just explained the last half hour of the broadcast. All right, we'll be back with more in just a moment.
It is very troubling. Former Obama Attorney General Loretta Lynch meddled in the FBI's investigation of Hillary Clinton. She instructed the FBI director to call the criminal investigation, quote, a matter, not an investigation. Even worse, she held a secret closed-door meeting on a government plane with former President Bill Clinton while Lynch's Department of Justice conducted a criminal investigation of his wife. Lynch violated federal regulations. She broke DOJ directives and ethics rules. Now the Senate Judiciary Committee has launched an investigation into the former Obama AG's corrupt actions. We've started our own investigation at the ACLJ, filing a major lawsuit against the Lynch DOJ over evidence of her unethical and deceitful actions. Demand truth and accountability with us. Add your name to our petition. It's time to uncover the truth. It's time to hold Lynch accountable. Call now 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, the agenda Iran, Russia, and jihadists share for conquering the world. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
To the broadcast, everyone. So we're now kind of moved past the Supreme Court cases, and now we're into the absurd. And I say absurd because you could not script this for a horror film. All the interrelations between all the parties, and now the acting director of the FBI and General Flynn, and that he was, you know, led the investigation, his office led the investigation on General Flynn, only to find out that General Flynn, 2 years before, was going to be a witness against one Andrew McCabe, the acting FBI director, in a harassment lawsuit. He was going to be a witness for the party. And then 2 years later, lo and behold, Andrew McCabe is now the acting FBI director. And guess who's under investigation? General Flynn. So again, you can't make this stuff up. But Andy, you are a U.S. attorney.
Yes.
I've never, these conflicts, I mean, we talked about the conflicts earlier, but how do you even put this in a box to understand?
It's very difficult, Jay, to really understand the conflicts, except what we need to do is what we're doing on this program, and that is elucidating and explaining the conflicts. You've got a situation in which the now the acting director of the FBI was alleged to have engaged in sexual discrimination against a special supervisory special agent of the FBI. And Flynn, the person who's being investigated, was going to be a witness for this
individual,
Robin Goritz, who is the Gritz, who was the agent. And this creates a conflict with this person continuing in that position, it would appear to me. But these are the conflicts that have to be understood and elucidated. And
but why would this be okay?
It's not okay.
Why? And then he's investigating General Flynn, who was going to be the witness against him.
Right.
And didn't think maybe he needed to recuse himself?
I mean, how can you not think that? That's what I want to know. How can you be in a position, how can you have risen to that position in the Federal Bureau of Investigation? And he was a big star, and he was a high riser.
He ran the D.C. office before he was the deputy director.
And he's now deputy director, now he's the acting director. How can you not see what a first-year law student, it would seem to me, would understand to be a conflict of interest?
Then let me take it a step further, Harry. That's one conflict. Then we have the Terry McAuliffe $700,000 transfer from his PAC. We talked a little bit about this earlier. That goes to Andrew McCabe's wife, who happens to be running for the Virginia Senate while all this is going on.
You are absolutely correct, Jay. And let me take it one step further. We also have the specter of Loretta Lynch, who decided to call the Hillary Clinton investigation
a matter.
And demanded that James Comey call it a matter.
Yes.
And there's possible evidence available of obstruction of justice. So we have conflicts of interest upon conflicts of interest, possible obstruction of justice. And where is this coming from? It's coming from either the Obama administration or former Obama administration officials.
Who are still in the government.
And yet, we are talking about the Russia collusion story with respect to the Trump administration. Yes, there's collusion out there, but most of the collusion implicates the Obama administration. Obama himself was implicated in the Russia story because he did nothing in the first place. So we again come back to the source of the problem. It was the Obama administration.
Yeah, so let me kind of put that in a context for you. So this is what I said this earlier. I mean, this is what we have a special counsel now investigating the Russia matter, right? I mean, that's going on right now. So the special counsel is investigating the Russia matter. Except we now know that the Obama administration already knew the evidence regarding the Russia hacking and attempts to interfere with the election. So that was already known. The intelligence community came to him, and he did nothing. But he also went out and denied that Russia could actually impact the election. So why don't we have a special counsel, as I said earlier, investigating what the Obama administration did? But I want to follow up on what Harry said also. And this is really important, folks. Do you see, I mean, you have to draw this out on a whiteboard to figure out who's on first base here. So the president doesn't even know General Flynn until a year ago, 2 years before the situation came up with this lawsuit from the agent against Andrew McCabe. General Flynn is a witness for the plaintiff. The defendant is Andrew McCabe. Turn around 24 months later, Andrew McCabe is now leading the investigation against General Flynn. Like I said, you really can't make this stuff up, Andy. I mean,
no.
And I'll tell you who suffers here. The American people suffer. That's who's paying the consequence of all of this. That's not even talking about the fake news situation, but this is really outlandish. And hard to believe it could be even made up.
Jay, Andrew McCabe has got a lot to answer for here, not only in the Flynn matter with his special agent who claimed sexual discrimination or whatever
The sexual discrimination case aside, the fact that he was a witness.
That's right.
Flynn was a witness and McCabe was the defendant. How is that okay that he's investigating Flynn?
It's not okay. It's not okay. It's simply not okay. But I am really concerned, really, about the failure on the part of McCabe to disclose the $700,000 that he received, or his wife received, not him, through his wife received during her campaign.
So is that mandatory to be reported on a financial disclosure?
Yes, it is. And furthermore, he is not supposed to campaign for a candidate.
That's the whole Hatch Act.
And that's a Hatch Act violation, potentially.
Which is now being subject to the U.S. Office of Special Counsel, which, by the way, is different than the special counsel. So that's being investigated by another agency within the United States government.
And I think it's even worse than that if you think about Sally Yates' behavior in this entire investigation.
Yeah. So Sally Yates was the, you know, when it's, I'm not going to enforce the executive order of the president on immigration because it's unconstitutional. Except no justice of the Supreme Court agreed with her. Go ahead, Amy.
Well, you know, I've got to say that. You know, ultimately, the president was vindicated in his termination of Sally Yates because here is a person who was the acting attorney general, okay? And the Office of Legal Counsel passed upon the propriety of the executive order, okay? Let's not forget that. And she took it upon herself to send a memorandum to the Department of Justice employees saying, do not enforce the executive order.
From the President
of the United States. Who are you to take an action like that? Simply speaking, if you cannot enforce an executive order as the acting attorney general,
quit.
You resign.
Yeah. Well, well, that's one thing they don't do, Harry, is resign.
Absolutely.
Nobody resigns here. Nobody recuses themselves. Nobody leaves. It just continues.
And so if we think about this story carefully, we should conclude as follows, that the investigation of Michael Flynn was fueled by personal animus between the FBI director, acting FBI director McCabe.
Aren't you supposed to avoid even the appearance of impropriety?
Yeah. But the avoidance of impropriety, that standard was breached a long time ago when Loretta Lynch met Bill Clinton on the tarmac in Phoenix.
Yeah, well, which we've got a lawsuit on that one, by the way, Andy. We are litigating that issue.
We do, and we are not getting the cooperation from the Department of Justice in terms of turning over the documents. And we have filed a lawsuit, Jay, in the United States District Court for the District of Columbia to require the Department of Justice to turn over to us documents that reflect the meeting between Bill Clinton and Loretta Lynch in that airport in Arizona, and they have refused to respond, and we are now gearing up in that case to get those documents. Surely, when the Attorney General meets with an ex-president of the United States, documents were created with respect to that meeting, and we are not being given those documents.
Of course, this comes from, you know, this whole Department of Justice, FBI mess, and then on top of that, you've got, which we haven't even had time to talk about today, explain the whole James Comey leaking the information so that he gets a special counsel, which he happens to get.
Who happens to be a very good friend of his.
Yes.
Who worked with him in the FBI.
Yeah, so he leaks information that if any FBI agent would have leaked would have resulted in an investigation of him, which I still think it will, by the way. I think that should happen. But none of this, you know, we live in a constitutional republic, Harry. If, you know, it's a constitutional republic that we live in. But when you see this kind of miscarriage of justice and just the whole perception of this, it should be not tolerated by anybody.
I agree with you, Jay, but it leads also to this conclusion that many elites believe that the law does not apply to them.
Yeah.
So you still have the Susan Rice story out there and the unmasking. You have Sally Yates. You have Loretta Lynch. You have Andrew McCabe. You have plenty of illustrations of misconduct or potential misconduct by high officials in the Obama administration. The Trump administration is paying a price for their misconduct.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. None of this is acceptable. None of this is acceptable. And as lawyers, you look at this and you say, what is really at play here? What is really going on here? And what you realize very quickly is that the American people are being taken advantage of by a system that is not only corrupt, but is targeted to cause situations like we just saw develop with the news, which I'm going to talk about in the last segment of the broadcast. So take what's really happening, and then with the way the news skews it, and what do you end up with? I'm going to talk about that when we come back from this break, folks. This has been a quick-moving 1 hour. We didn't take any calls for a reason here. We hadn't had time to give you an analysis, and I wanted to do it. We come back from the break. What about the news reporting on all of this? How is that okay? Well, evidently at CNN, right now, it's not. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. It is very troubling. Former Obama Attorney General Loretta Lynch meddled in the FBI's investigation of Hillary Clinton. She instructed the FBI director to call the criminal investigation, quote, a matter, not an investigation. Even worse, she held a secret closed-door meeting on a government plane with former President Bill Clinton while Lynch's Department of Justice conducted a criminal investigation of his wife. Lynch violated federal regulations. She broke DOJ directives and ethics rules. Now the Senate Judiciary Committee has launched an investigation into the former Obama AG's corrupt actions. We've started our own investigation at the ACLJ, filing a major lawsuit against the Lynch DOJ over evidence of her unethical and deceitful actions. Demand truth and accountability with us. Add your name to our petition. It's time to uncover the truth. It's time to hold Lynch accountable. Call now 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org. Come on.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. So let me put the last segment in context here. We've talked about the Supreme Court cases. We've talked about the conflicts inside the Department of Justice and the FBI. Now the media. We really hit this yesterday on the broadcast. But I thought it would be good to put all of this in context. So we have all of these stories kind of conflating at the same time. As I said, creating mass confusion. And then the media, not only complicit in creating the confusion, but actually kind of leading the charge on this. So CNN has to fire... allowed to resign three executives. Why? Because the story they put about our friend Anthony Scaramucci was completely false. He was doing business with some Russian bank. Completely false story. And then the head of CNN says, well, we've got to be careful. We've got to have more checks and balances. We've got to vet these stories more carefully. Meanwhile, they tried to destroy a guy while they did it. And then they think they get away with it by, what, firing the three people? But it shows you, Harry, the nature of where the media is on this. And it feeds into the confusion of the case. These are not pure and pristine facts. These facts do not pass any legal test as normative. The conflicts, who's on first, you know, none of this works.
Jay, I think the Russia collusion story is fueled by two things. Anti-Trump animus and the pursuit of profits and the willing accomplices at CNN in the pursuit of profits are also willing to engage in what? Fictional stories in order to fuel ratings.
Yeah, so they fuel the ratings. They end up not having many ratings. And then you look at Andy, then they pull the story back. Now, how many times is this? I don't care if it's the New York Times or the Washington Post. They're constantly pulling stories back because they're creating stories to create a narrative. That's what they're doing. They're in the business of creating a narrative.
Well, this is what the president has talked about all along since he's used the term fake news and has been ridiculed about it. Why are we ridiculing the president for saying fake news when, in fact, this thing with Scaramucci is what was really going to be a fake news story? And finally, in apprehension of the liability that they were going to incur.
That's the only reason they corrected
and
it.
That's the only reason, is right. They pull the story back, and then they make the gesture of when we got rid of the bad people by getting rid of the three staffers who had engaged in this terrible conduct by writing up a story that turned out not to be the case. Well, you know what? It's a responsibility of the producers at CNN to have gotten this right in the first place and not to have fostered an atmosphere, which they have and the left has, of getting out fake news. The president is right when he says fake news.
We have the, what was it exactly? I'm asking Will to pull this. Exactly what CNN said they're going to do going forward on the Russia stories, because it didn't meet their, it was a statement that they issued that didn't meet their high standards. But Harry, here's the problem, and I see this happening consistently with the media on this. Oh my gosh, we could give you 100 stories. The leaks, the undocumented stories, the stories that have to be retracted. But in the interim, it's causing injury and harm.
Absolutely. So The media and many elites in Washington are desperate to repair their reputation. Their reputation is in tatters. And so they continue to leak stories in order to diminish Trump's victory, because virtually everyone in the media was laughing at the prospect that President Trump could get elected. He's stunned them, and he stunned many people in America. So in order to cover themselves,
yep,
they have created a number of fictional stories. They started out with a claim that it was simply white racism that fueled Trump's success. Then it was all of those deplorables in the Midwest. Now it's the Russia narrative. And we all know that these are simply fake, fictional, made-up stories.
Yep.
And they're designed to continue to diminish President Trump.
So I'm going to play Soundbite 33, John Bonifield. He's a CNN editor, or producer, actually, a senior producer, who was caught on tape by James O'Keefe at the Veritas Project about what's going on the Russia situation. Listen to what he said.
And so I think the president is probably right to say, like, look, you are witch hunting me. Like, you have no smoking gun. You have no real proof.
But they've created an entire enterprise out of this medium, out of this narrative, Andy. They've got an entire narrative that they've done here. But you got their editors and producers saying, no, there's no smoking. Not only is there no smoking gun, he said, yeah, I think it's right to call it a witch hunt.
Well, I think they've built an entire network on that, and
yep,
it's called CNN, and that's
yep
what they've done. And this is, I think, a function of one unmistakable reality, and that's simply this. The left has still not accepted the results of the presidential election of 2016. They cannot do it.
But even if you don't want to accept it, and people don't want to accept it, okay, that's a free country, believe whatever you want. Putting it down into media sound bites, putting it into statements, that shouldn't be tolerated. Why is that? I keep saying this when I'm being interviewed. Why is that okay? Harry, why is that okay that they could create a false narrative, print it out there, put it out there in the media, whether it's the Washington Post, New York Times, whatever it might be, and then say, oh, whoops, sorry.
Well, I think there's one reason for that, and that is the media has decided to engage in virtue signaling. In other words, they are signaling to their left-wing readers that they remain committed forever and a day to the Trump resistance story. And so they continue to push this narrative, notwithstanding the evidence and the facts that are on the ground. Trump was never the target of the Russia collusion investigation. FBI Director Comey assured Trump that he was not the target on three occasions. He even assured members of Congress in private that Trump was not the target. But yet, the narrative continues, even though there are no facts in support of it.
Because the facts don't mean anything to these media sources. I mean, the facts are like a disposable. You don't have to have facts when you could create something out of whole cloth and then you know, say 2 weeks later, we didn't mean it, or we got it wrong, or we're firing three reporters because they misstated. A guy was not actually doing business with a Russian bank. A little bit of a significant statement. But I mean, you know, they get away with this, and they think it's okay. And then it gets pulled back. Now, here's the question, Andy. I'm going to kind of close with this. We've just covered the two major Supreme Court cases. We've covered all the conflicts. What's the message in this for the American people?
The message for this in the American people is to beware of the news media, and that is called the standard mainstream news media. You cannot trust them. You have got to inform yourself. You have got to realize that the responsibility for understanding the news is not what's in the newspapers today, and it's certainly not what's on the liberal media. You've got to inform yourself, and you've got to be cognizant of the facts. Be an informed citizen, listen carefully, and be critical in your judgments that occur.
Here is from CNN's vice president. No one should publish any content involving Russia without coming to me and Jason Farkas, a CNN vice president. This applies to social, video, editorial, and money stream. No exceptions. The email added, I will lay out a workflow Monday. This was after they had to retract the story. So there you have it. Fortunately, we're able to come to you each and every day for an hour to discuss with you these issues. laid out there on the stations that carry it, and we couldn't do it without them. Facebook and Periscope, of course, as well. But the over 1,000 stations that carry this broadcast every day. That's the way we communicate. And also to stay involved and engaged in what we're doing, I encourage you to visit our social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter. I've got a page. Jordan's got a page. Logan has a page. The American Center for Law and Justice has a page. Also, at Jay Sekulow, at Logan Sekulow, at Jordan Sekulow. Good ways to stay engaged with everything we're doing here at the ACLJ. That's going to do it for this broadcast today. Who knows what tomorrow's going to happen? No idea. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
It is very troubling. Former Obama Attorney General Loretta Lynch meddled in the FBI's investigation of Hillary Clinton. She instructed the FBI director to call the criminal investigation, quote, a matter, not an investigation. Now the Senate Judiciary Committee has launched an investigation into the former Obama AG's corrupt actions. We've started our own investigation at the ACLJ. Add your name to our petition. Call now 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org.